Welcome to the Tuesday, March 11th edition of the Berkman Luncheon Series podcast. Today's speaker is Scoop08 founder Alexander Heffner. Scoop08 offers fresh coverage of the presidential election written by and from a youth perspective.
Senior at Phillips Academy at Andover, Massachusetts, and is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Scoop08 website, which is an online national student newspaper, which is dedicated to coverage of the 2008 presidential election. We are very excited to have him speak to us here at the Berkman today. There are several projects here at the Berkman, such as Digital Natives and the Internet and Democracy Project, which are looking at youth engagement and participation online. So we are really looking forward to hear from Alexander what he has to tell us about his experience. I should remind you that this is an event which is being recorded and webcasted live. So everything that you say, any questions, any comments will be recorded. So if you don't want to say anything tricky, just don't say it. Before I let Alexander start, I just want to make a couple of announcements. This year is Berkman at 10, is the 10th anniversary of the Berkman Center. For those of you that don't know, we are having a big conference in May. You can find out all the details online. And I'd also like to flag two more events. One is the Open Access book launch this Friday. Sorry, I got it wrong. The Access Denied book launch this Friday. And next week, we're having two open access events with speakers. And again, you can find the details on the Berkman website. Before we start, it's a tradition that we go around the room and introduce ourselves. If you can just say briefly your affiliation and what you work on. Maybe we start with Doc, since Josh is... Or Gene, actually.
Oh, Gene Koo, I'm a fellow here.
Doc Searles, I'm a fellow.
John Clippinger, fellow.
I'm Savannah, I work on digital natives.
Melanie Junon, fellow here.
David Ari, I'm a fellow.
Victor Song, software engineer.
Mary Joyce, Kennedy School.
Sally Walkerman, I'm on staff here.
Catherine Bracey, Berkman Center's administrative director.
Alan Friedman, Kennedy School and Computer Science Department.
Stephanie Miel, I'm a fellow here at Center.
I'm Victoria Stone, I'm also a fellow here.
Corina Di Gennaro, fellow at the Berkman.
Andrew Witherski, ONI at Berkman.
Mike Dean, Berkman Center staff.
Mary Rendell, fellow here.
Hello,
Nolan, Berkman Center staff.
Maya Marshall, Berkman intern.
We're Asher, Berkman staff.
Tim Hong, and Andrew.
Good strategy,
and Berkman Sam Byard, Berkman fellow.
Karen Shaw, Berkman Sociology Department, doing some research here.
Josh Goldstein, Berkman's Internet and Democracy.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. It's terrific to be here. It's an honor for me as an 18-year-old to be sitting with my fellow.
You'll catch up.
Internet and politics savvy individuals. I have some prepared remarks, but before I proceed to read them, I just want to play a brief clip, and this is from our demo, Scoop08.com's promo that we launched this past summer for the site's launch, exactly a year from the election, November 4th, 2007. So not just the usual suspects, I think, was key. And as we look to the current primary season, as it continues to evolve day by day, that was a theme that we've stressed from the very beginning, that this was going to be an unconventional presidential election year, where we would have candidates with whom the American people were not familiar with, in large part being introduced to the American people. And I wanted to just identify that line in the promo, so we could kind of use that as a starting point. Now, I have some remarks, and after these remarks, I raise a few questions, and I would be delighted to hear your responses and to get any feedback on the website or on how we can use the internet for a useful, productive political forum. So again, many thanks for the invitation this afternoon. I'm especially grateful to John Palfrey, an advisor to Scoop08.com, for his counsel as we continue to assemble the website. Scoop08 is a startup, nonpartisan student publication I co-founded again this past November to offer fresh coverage of the 2008 presidential election through a network of student journalists across the country, all volunteer contributors. The website strives to offer distinctive youth perspectives on the race with innovative and unconventional beats, such as independent candidate rhetoric and arts correspondence, as well as a diverse array of columnists. With a full-fledged editorial board and committed staff with copy editors and staff writers, Scoop08 operates like a professional electronic or print outlet. Presently, the site has a network of several hundred student journalists across the country and abroad, and we actively continue to recruit new editors and writers from across America. Some of our founding editors and staff writers hail from Phillips Academy, like myself, Yale, Harvard, Ohio University, Arizona State, Washington University in St. Louis, to public high schools across the U.S., so a very broad spectrum. In every feature on the site, we try to preserve the quality of our journalism to offer substantive reporting as well as a breadth of opinion. We distinguish between the work of our news correspondents and that of our columnists, and we try to thoroughly develop our stories and engage student editors and reporters in a virtual newsroom in which they can interact together and trade ideas before a piece is published. At Scoop08, we care deeply, profoundly about innovative ideas that will really motivate young people this time around, and we've seen that already in some of the results of the primaries and caucuses, an unprecedented number of young people going to the polls. For instance, one of these ideas earlier this primary season, we proposed in an editorial on Scoop08, was to engage in a bipartisan debate rather than pandering to the party bases between both Democrats and Republicans. Because we've seen a lot of debates that have focused on the Democratic Party base or the Republican Party base, but we proposed why not bring the two parties together to discuss some of the real issues affecting all Americans. I was asked in an online interview in preparation for this appearance, what are some of the old school journalistic techniques we like? And one of them is the Q&A. We had an interview recently with Mike Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, who answered some of our questions after his op-ed column in the Times declaring that he won't run for president. At Scoop08, we welcome student journalists who've had a great deal of experience, but also newer young people who have just come to see the light and would like to pursue journalism. We encourage all kinds of writers and freelancers to gain experience by writing for Scoop08. Over the course of the site's lifespan thus far, we've found it difficult because a lot of students who participate in the site have academic engagements and other extracurricular engagements, so that's always problematic, can be problematic, to maintain a constantly updated site with news alerts and frequently updated blogs. Throughout the campaign, we'll continue to accept submissions from all young people and to publish feature and investigative reports delving more deeply into the candidates. While at the moment we're focused exclusively on covering the 2008 presidential race, the remaining candidates, the central policy debates, the lead up to the conventions, we hope to pursue journalism in public affairs and politics moving forward. We're in the process of upgrading our site, scoop08.com. If you go to it right now, you'll see a waiting page, essentially a landing page with our logo. In the next week, we'll be upgrading various features to make it more interactive, to make it more connected to the rest of the blogosphere and news sites online. And we'll also be updating it more constantly. And we have essentially updated it daily as of this point with new articles essentially every day, but even more updates, even more news alerts via Scoop 08, and that will be launching in the next week or two. One of our goals with this news site is to have a half dozen to a dozen student reporters and photographers in every state, because we believe my fellow, my counterpart, Andrew Mangino, who founded the site with me, who's a junior at Yale, we both believe very strongly that this 08 election is not going to be just decided in Florida and Ohio. It's going to be a nationwide contest. And we think, particularly if Barack Obama and John McCain are the two-party nominees, that this is going to be a fight for centrists like Mike Bloomberg, who kind of put himself on the op-ed page saying, I'm an undecided voter, just like most Americans, and this is an election that's going to be fought in California, New York, Missouri, all over. We're striving with these five or six to a dozen chief reporters in every state with the upgraded site to delve into more investigative journalism, because we feel that we're closer in certain respects as students to academia, to professors, to potential leads, potential scoops, and we're going to try to embrace that moving forward by really investigating the remaining candidates, where they have stood in the past and where they stand presently. Since the birth of the site in November of 2007, we've grappled with many questions that face news sites and blogs and virtual newsrooms. And I want to raise these questions now and have a conversation about them, because I can certainly learn a tremendous amount from all of you folks and your expertise in the field of the internet and particularly journalism that we see evolve online every day. But some of these questions are: beyond print, how should multimedia be integrated into a news website? How can journalism, traditional ink, as well as new technologies arouse student interest in public affairs and combat voter apathy? Which tactics work and which don't? Without horse race-centered coverage, how can a website report and present thoughtful, even academic ideas and still generate buzz in the mainstream media and in the blogosphere? And that's a key point I should just highlight, because we haven't followed the mainstream news cycle. And I think a lot of folks in the MSM, as it's referred to, have been receptive to Scoop 08 because they see we're proposing opinions and ideas that are not just follow-ups on breaking news stories. And that's been difficult, because you can't simply reject the status quo and not have a huge PR campaign that's going to promote your site and make it unique. And that's what we've tried to do. But in the new version of the site, we're going to deliberately attempt to attach ourselves more to other websites so that our articles can be syndicated. And they have been on CNN and the Huffington Post, but we want to do more of that to compete even more with other websites. Finally, a few other questions. How can responsible young people and adults too, I might add, participate in a two-way conversation with the news gatherers and pundits? How can well-informed readers of all ages evolve into trustworthy citizen journalists and writers upholding lasting principles of good journalism? Indeed, can we agree on what makes sound journalistic practices and an informative, truly meaningful story? These are some of the questions I hope we can attempt to answer today. And I would just add, as a starting point, when I talk about sound journalistic practices and an informative, truly meaningful story, that's a debate happening in print newsrooms, and that's a debate happening in virtual newsrooms. And there are a whole lot of Pandora's boxes we can open today, and I look forward to it. So thanks for your time. Yes, well, I can play this. I'll play a few clips and then we can start the questions. Let me close this. Where are we? Oh, there we go. So to offer a little bit more perspective on the site itself, my partner and I have appeared on CNN a few times to offer our analysis of the youth vote. So let me just play this first CNN clip.
Okay, so what do you get when you combine the growing interest of young voters in the 2008 presidential campaign with new technologies such as the internet? One result is an online news service called Scoop08. It offers election news by and for students. Joining me are website co-founders Alexander Hefner in New York. Good to see you.
Thank you, Frederica.
And Andrew Mangino in New Haven, Connecticut. Good to see you as well.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, gentlemen, say I'm in my early 20s. Why do I want it? Hey, why are you laughing there, Alexander? It's not that off the mark, is it? Okay, why do I want to go to your website? What am I looking for?
Well, I think you'll find on scoop08.com revealing, engaging content on the 08 race. We have a network of over 300 student journalists across the country who are covering all the candidates, all the issues, and the scope of the production allows for us to cover candidates like Mike Huckabee, Ron Paul, others who are just coming to the forefront of the campaign presently.
Now, you guys are pretty new to this whole news business, and you're fairly new to politics as well, right, Andrew? So what provoked the interest for you? Why did you decide that this was a need out there for the young voter?
Absolutely. Well, you have two currents going on sort of at the same time. First of all, you got the internet, and for me, that was one of the most exciting aspects of everything going on in the world right now. It's the first time today that students can go outside of their college gates or high school gates and interact with students all across the country. So you have that going on one hand, and then also the 2008 presidential election, there's so much energy sort of built up toward around college campuses and high school campuses that you combine the two, mm-hmm. and Scoop 08 becomes sort of a not just a good idea but a need almost in this.
Wow.
Election.
So how do you explain that energy, you know, among the young and in a lot of cases first time voters come November 08, when for so many presidential elections of recent past we've been talking about the voter apathy among young people. What's going on this time around?
Well, I think you can see that at scoop08.com. You can see, as Andrew mentioned, that young people really do have an outlet to discuss these issues online. And I think over the course of the campaign thus far, you were referring to Ron Paul's soaring internet fundraising operation. You've seen that dialogue play out through citizen journalism operations, through scoop08.com. I think the internet, as Andrew mentioned, has allowed for students from California, Texas, the Northeast, to come together and to report on the race. And this is an opportunity unlike any other. It is truly unprecedented. We have not seen the internet play this influential a role in any presidential election thus far.
And so, Andrew, is that really the key for the young people? If you are a candidate and you are savvy with the internet, you're really using it as a tool in your campaigning, you are going to grab the younger voters.
It's true, but at the same time, and this is part of the premise that Scoop08 is founded on, young people, I think, nowadays really actually do care about the issues, too. And what Scoop08 is trying to bring is substantive reporting on some of the policy or personality or large generational issues that are affecting young people. So I think the internet is a gateway to communicating to young people about what really matters to them.
All right, and this is exciting, too, for both of you because, Andrew, if my research is right, you're 20. Alexander, you're 17. Will you be 18 by
18.
November?
You're
18 now.
I am.
And I just turned 21, actually.
Well,
just
then,
a few days.
For both of you, then, this is your first presidential election that you'll be voting in, right?
That's correct.
All right, well, exciting. All right, Alexander Hefner, Andrew Mangino, thanks so much. It's Scoop 08.
Okay, so that was one clip that it gives you a little bit more of an in-depth picture of Scoop 08 and our own interaction with people in the mainstream media, which I think is an interesting dynamic as we move forward. So I want to also show, if we have time, and I think we do, three kind of seminal moments that we've seen play out through YouTube clips. I believe one of your guests recently was the Yes We Can author and producer. And I'm sure you folks have seen that recently, so I won't play that. Are you all familiar with the Yes We Can, five million other, probably even more, Americans and international citizens? Well, here, this might be a moment you haven't seen recently or a clip you haven't seen recently, but this was from the beginning of the campaign, and it was a notable 08 headline at the time. It was the Clinton 1984 ad.
1 month ago, I began a conversation with all of you, and so far, we haven't stopped talking. And
That's really good. I intend to keep telling you exactly where I stand on all of the issues.
I'm looking at how to help you and other people who are hardworking like you. And I've really been impressed by how serious people are.
Because we all need to be part of the discussion if we're all going to be part of the solution.
I don't want people who already agree with me. I want honest, experienced, hardworking, patriotic people who want to be part of a team, the American team. I hope you've learned a little bit more about what I'm believing and trying to do and really help this conversation about our country get started.
I hope to keep this conversation all the way to November 2008.
I mean, it wasn't that foretelling what would might be happening this primary season, because that was, you know, the Obama campaign immediately distanced itself from that YouTube clip. But I would wonder if they would today, because of the heated nature of the '08 campaign. And to be fair, you know, we're completely unbiased at Scoop 08. I would play, but it's not, it hasn't received as many hits. But I don't have it here, but we can find it at the end of the conference, which is a Clinton ad that garnered some attention among young people. I don't know how many of you saw it. She was this rock star. It was a Clinton rock star ad. And there were several members of her group, you know, her fictional rock group. And, you know, she was telling them, oh, I'm leaving you to go on the campaign trail. It was, you know, also trying to appeal to young voters. But there have been various ads directed towards, I think, young people this primary season, and I think that's been unusual and unique. And the final clip I'd show you is just an indication of how quickly news happens. So you have a New York Times reporter, well-known political reporter, asking John McCain on the plane about John Kerry and his conversation with Senator McCain in the run-up to the 04 general election about possibly partnering with him in appearing on the ticket. So this immediately, this was on the plane, and this just demonstrates how quickly this news spreads, as we know, but it certainly offers insight into the world of internet journalism and how quickly something like this can happen, and then the blogosphere can latch onto it and start offering perspective.
We just got some videotape into us here at MSNBC. John McCain on the press plane, and he got a bit testy. He was asked about a conversation he had in 2004 with then presidential nominee John Kerry, in which Kerry asked McCain potentially to be his running mate. Let's play the tape.
Everybody knows I had a vital conversation. Everybody knows that I had a conversation. There's no living American in Washington that knows that. There's no one. And you know it too. So, no, you know it. You know it. So I don't know even know why you asked. No, you do know it. You do know it.
No, I just read it in the Times. It may have.
I don't know what you meant, read, or heard of, and I don't know the circumstances. Maybe in May of 04 I hadn't had a conversation. I don't know, but it's well known that I had the conversation. It was absolutely well known by everyone. So do you have a question on another issue? No, because the issue is closed as far as I'm concerned. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it in America.
Can you describe
Pardon me?
Can you describe
no, of course not. I don't describe private conversations.
Okay, can I ask you?
Why should I? Then there's no such thing as a private conversation, is there? If you have a private conversation with someone and then come and tell you, I don't know that that's a private conversation.
Okay.
I think that's a public conversation.
Can I ask you about your, why you're so angry?
Pardon me? You guys catch that?
I mean, it's well known. Everybody knows. It's been well chronicled 1,000 times.
Are you so
John
angry?
John Kerry asked if I would consider being his running mate. And I said categorically no under no circumstances. That's all very well known.
Well, that reporter had claimed that McCain once denied that a conversation between Kerry and him took place. So McCain wasn't really having any of that.
Okay.
Can we see some of your coverage?
Our coverage?
Yeah.
Video coverage? Well, I can read you some articles. I mean, we've focused largely on print because we wanted from the get-go to establish ourselves as credible online journalists. And the site's actually down, so I don't have any. We have had video contributors. Again, we're transitioning to Scoop 08 2.0. But one of the things we're stressing about the new edition is we've got down the basics when it comes to an editorial process and cycle so that we know students from all over America can contribute. We know the editors who are overseeing the process, and now we're trying to experiment with new technologies, new innovations. But we really, and I can read to you some of the, I think, more interesting articles that, we've published on an array of subjects. I mean, student journalists are lunatics. They write so many stories, as many stories as, in many cases, as regular print journalists. I'm working myself on several stories right now. You know, the premise, I think, to start with is how can you compete as a relatively unknown entity when you're stressing the academic nature or the professionalism or the high quality caliber of your journalism without necessarily having news of Elliot Spitzer or Bill Clinton and their scandalous personal lives.
Were they involved?
What's that?
Were they involved? Sorry.
No. At any rate, I mean, it's interesting to watch this play out. As an observer and also as a participant, and the way the Drudge Report interacts with some of these sites and how newspapers are now leaking some of their stories to Drudge so that they can get as much traffic as possible via a particular story. But I just want to open it up to all of your questions about Scoop 08. I can read. I brought several sample articles that I've written and some other student journalists have written. Sure. Sure.
About the process that you just mentioned?
The writing process and the editorial
process? So the editorial process.
Sure. So my partner and I, over this past summer, engaged in hundreds of interviews with young people who, there was the first press coverage of Scoop 08 was by the late William F. Buckley, who wrote a column in the National Review, and it was a syndicated column about the venture. Comparing it to other journalistic revolutions that he had seen or participated in himself, and commenting about how this is the future. You know, we have to accept that the internet is home to journalistic enterprises, and, you know, we try to convince Mr. Buckley, and we still try to convince all of our readers now that we're bringing these old school journalistic techniques. So, for instance, over this summer, before the site launched, after Buckley's column, we waged a massive campaign to reach out to high school and college student journalists across the country, Harvard, Northwestern, at public schools in California and Michigan, people who are still on our staff today. We interviewed them. We talked to them about their past experience in journalism. We talked about with them their interest in opinion or hard news reporting. Developed a sense of the body we were working with, started making decisions about how we were going to approach constructing this forum and this editorial board, which is what it became. And Andrew, my fellow co-editor, and I selected people. The process itself has evolved so that any young person who visits the site can immediately submit an opinion piece or a contribution that you might see as a post on the Huffington Post. So it's essentially a space to vent for young people credibly, sensibly, and that's something that I caution young people about regularly, developing their ideas. So the process can work so that you're an outside contributor and you just want to submit an article. You email it, it goes to the managing editors and to the editors. We review it. We have a national editor who receives all the outside staff submissions. They go from him to the managing editors to us. And we have a copy editorial team and fact-checking team. Every reporter and editor signs a contract that I have here and goes through an orientation process, and it might be interesting to read how in-depth we are and how much we really care about journalistic integrity, because we have a very comprehensive orientation process from the editors to new correspondents and new editors joining us. And I'm happy to pass this around. It's both the correspondent policy and agreement 2007-2008, as well as an insider's account of the website with all of the kind of standards and traditions of print journalism that we're trying to adopt online, in terms of your relationship with sources, in terms of your interviews, either electronic interviews or interviews in person with sources. So I'll pass this around, and it also has a page with a description of the editorial board, the respective editors. So I was describing the outside contributor, but before I pass this around, let me just describe the editorial board and how that functions. So we have correspondents up until the candidates started exiting from the race. We had correspondents on Mike Huckabee and Ron Paul and others who were lesser known candidates, and that's what I mentioned in that CNN clip. All these correspondents, whether they're candidate correspondents, a Hillary Clinton correspondent, or a Mitt Romney correspondent, there are two Democratic candidate editors, two Republican candidate editors. Then we have features areas. I mentioned arts. We have a movie critic who writes columns on movies old and new and their relevance to the 08 campaign. Really, it's micro-beat reporting on every single element, every single conceivable angle one could identify related to the 08 campaign, because we really are putting all of our beans in this and putting ourselves on the line and suggesting to our peers that this election is absolutely critical. And the more we can learn about these candidates and the issues, the better. So it goes through that chain of command. A correspondent whom we interview and add to the staff, all volunteers, who then have one or two editors per section. So the movie critic and our rhetoric correspondent who analyzes comments the candidates make on the campaign trail, those are part of the feature section. We have two features editors. So it's these micro beats with beat reporters and editors. And that's how the editorial board functions.
One have the site down right now. One have the old site up. Well, two sites. Did you say that already? I missed it.
What's that?
Or did you say that already and I missed it?
Why it's down? Because we're transitioning. I say a week to 2 weeks. I mean, these things can always take unpredictable turns, but our hope is to have it up in the next day or two.
Okay.
I'm just being very cautious because
of
the way the internet works. I mean, and you're talking to someone who's really interested in the heart and soul of journalism, and has learned himself about these new technologies and about the web, and has been intrigued by it, but who's most passionate about the journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't, I'll say it again, that doesn't get you immediate press coverage, that doesn't get you buzz necessarily online, but it, you know, ultimately you leave the process with a clear conscience. And that's how all of our reporters and all of our editors and all of the participants feel about the project. It's a collaboration, it's a consolidation of the perspectives and voices of young people.
It's just a technical question.
Oh, the technical question
just
itself.
Why not leave the old one up while you're working on a new one? That's all.
Oh, it has been up. It just was down. Oh, I'm sorry if it wasn't being clear.
Yeah.
It actually went down this morning, and the new site will be back up in the next couple of days.
Okay.
It's been on permanently from November 4th, 2007 until yesterday. Sorry.
No, that's cool.
Can you pass all of the articles?
Sure, absolutely.
Alan, I have a question for you, sorry.
Yes.
So my question is, what you've described, from my understanding of it, and my understanding is very limited, so I may be totally wrong, is that it sounds like you're trying to recreate organizationally the structure of a print media news organization whose primary medium of distribution and consumption is internet, is the internet.
Right.
I'm wondering, you talked about plans to increase the sort of, to create Scoop 2.0, and I'm wondering if you could say a little more about what kinds of features that's going to entail. Is it going to be a more collaborative platform? What sorts of changes are you going
to make? Because, and I hope you can associate with this, because it was a young person's enterprise, young people's enterprise, we really wanted to get the basics down with the print. Our intention was to explore all these new mediums and technologies from the outset, but that didn't happen because of the way, you know, the process worked. And we wanted to identify all the issues within the print flow of that regular newsroom that you described, the print newspaper newsroom. But new features and technologies you can expect on 2.0 include chats with our reporters, so any user or reader of the site can have almost like the Washington Post, the New York Times, or various newspapers do this. The LA Times does it as well, where you can, there are scheduled chats with our reporters. We did some video, but inconsistently, the new site will have a regular podcast. We have an advisory board with Judy Woodruff, Frank Rich, and other on both TV and print. And they've counseled us, but expect interviews with them on a more regular basis to hear what's happening on the campaign, as well as, very frequent interviews that are done just one-on-one, but now on a different level with an electronic-based platform. So having interviews with these students and professors, we do podcasted or just as audio or video on the site. Mm-hmm. So more exploration into audio and video.
Right, so sort of channel multiplication.
Right.
Has there been any consideration of exploring sort of distributed editing or sort of collaborative production techniques through the site? I mean, online media, that's the sort of...
Completely open?
Not completely. I mean, there are lots of mixed kinds of arrangements that are possible. I'm just curious if that's come up in your conversations or is something you're thinking about.
Something we're thinking about.
Yeah, okay.
And also, as far as comments are concerned, you know, we had an About Us and a Scoop Us where any young person reading the site could immediately send feedback, but there's going to be a more, more consistent comment feature on every article so that people can really engage in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've been thinking about, and it's only been a visualization, it hasn't been a reality, is having a blog. I almost describe it as a football field, because of the way politics works, but you have something that is just been in my mind. It hasn't come to fruition in any tangible way besides in my mind, is having a blog about 2008 political headlines that encourages guidance as far as what people are talking about. Because if you visit the New York Times or Politico.com, you'll find that some of the comments are fairly unproductive. We were cautious about that because being students, we didn't want to be immediately accused of, you know, having all these comments that are irrelevant or off-topic or offensive. And that's what initially prompted our concern about not opening it up completely yet, just as far as comments are concerned. The football field idea is... The football field spans a day of, in politics, which is really, you know, years in political journalism. And the idea is to have stories, and this is done, but just not in the way I'm describing. have stories updated every day, so you're essentially moving from your end zone to your opponent's end zone, and it's like a day in the life of a political football player. But the point is to have stories that are breaking that day guide the conversation, rather than just having an open comment bar underneath every single article. Mm-hmm. So, because I regularly visit these sites that I mentioned, and sometimes the comments are, I think I said it before, unproductive. And you know, Professor Palfrey visited my school and talked about the great advantages of the internet and the way the internet can be used as a positive force in society. And many of my peers and I were really inspired by his lecture. And but inside, I have my own skepticism about the internet. I was saying to a former New York Times columnist this morning that even as a young person who's immediately engaged in everything internet-related, I have my own skepticism, and that's why we've been cautious.
If I can just follow up on this, at the Berkman, Miriam here is part of the team as well. We are working on a project called Digital Natives, which might be a little bit, where we look at how young people use and interact with technology. And one of our findings is that civic engagement is one of the less frequent uses of the internet. So listening to you talk, I was just wondering if you have any hard data on who your audience and your readership is. And if you do not have those, who you would like your readership to be? Are you trying to get people involved, those who are already involved in the presidential elections, or are you trying to reach out to young people that if it wasn't for the internet, they wouldn't be involved otherwise? And how are you doing this? How are you reaching out to youngsters that maybe are more likely to be found on YouTube rather than on a site like yours?
Well, our target audience, first and foremost, I think, has been young people, trying to offer ideas that will appeal to them, as I mentioned in my prepared remarks, ideas that will really motivate them to care about politics and to care about public affairs and issues that are affecting them and their families. And in terms of the response we've received to Scoop 08, it's been predominantly student oriented, or student led in that sense. Every time we analyze the youth vote on CNN or are asked to comment for any variety of newspapers, the response is usually an uptake in readership, and more people get involved. And our goal is really to have a 50-state and even international effort among students. You know, we always said for students by students. That said, we're trying this summer, when we are not bound by academic requirements, to offer more original investigative content that would appeal to a broader spectrum of potential readers, not only students.
You said the reporters are all volunteers, that the whole editorial, everybody's volunteer?
Yeah.
Is that your plan for the long term, or is that the way it is now?
It's the way it is now, uh-huh. And it's a non-profit, non-partisan entity, I'm not sure if it could certainly evolve into, a news service that might have more permanent staffers. But in spirit, Scoop 08 has always been about kind of non-profit, what we call at Phillips Academy, non-sibi, not for oneself, for all the readers. So, and that's something I've tried to adopt in looking at Scoop 08 and its message. But who knows where it will sail in the future.
And where were you personally getting your news about the election before you started, or your news in general?
My homepage is New York Times, but I would say I can name specific papers that newspapers like the Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, then blogs on those sites, you know, I would say a wide range of periodicals too, Newsweek, Time. Yes.
As a young person and a reporter, I kind of sympathize with what you guys are doing. However, my major skepticism is that I know that as a young person and a reporter, people won't really talk to you. Your influence is limited. Your access is very limited. And that's working for a mainstream publication. And I guess my question is, how do you, as you know, building something from without having any reputation whatsoever as an organization, as a news source, using younger people who are, you know, less experienced journalists, how do you get beyond that wall of the press flack? What kind of advice do you give your reporters? Because I'm thinking of, you know, time constraints on these students. The only tool you have is tenacity and time, and if you don't have time, you can't have tenacity.
Right.
How do you get beyond the press release?
Right, right. Very good question. I mean, it's tough, and, you know, it can be grueling at times, and we encourage our reporters not to only seek out perspective and comments from the campaigns and to think that they're only going to get the scoops if they participate in the same way political reporters at the New York Times, you know, in the way they operate, following debates, following the candidates on campaign buses and planes. And, you know, we've had our share of press passes to cover debates in Iowa and Florida and New Hampshire. A lot of first-time journalists have had the opportunity to go to these events and to see Bill Clinton or Michelle Obama speak, or to see the candidates themselves. And that's a plus because it gives them experience. And this is also Scoop 08 about building journalistic experience among young people. So that's part of it. We encourage our reporters to try to seek out ideas and quotes from unexpected, you know, sources, you know, ones they might not necessarily think about initially. And that's been kind of the theme in trying to reach out to people who might not be approached about 2008 or about 2008 politics and hearing what they have to say about the election. You know, one of the things we're going to try to do in the next couple of weeks and months ahead is have a more frequent weekly interview series with people in business and in the academic world. And so I think Scoop 08 has offered an opportunity to young people to speak to a lot of different professors and their fellow students and actually formulate ideas and put it on paper. But there's no doubt in my mind that it's been a tough ride and that, you know, we're trying to build our credibility and our clout one step at a time through getting press credentials at events, having reporters who accompany the candidates at sites, but then also going back to the library or the libraries at our respective schools and looking at the public record, because there's more access, you know, on LexisNexis and through our professors that we have that we might not even realize. And that's where we might find our next big scoop or our first big scoop.
That was also, what happens in December for you guys? What happens in December for you guys?
Well, you know, what I'd like to
Yeah,
2010s. No, I mean, I think we'll be more prepared. I mean, my partner and I intend to devote all of our summer to improving the website, to continuing to offer youth perspective on any network or for any newspaper that would like from us or all of our other editors and writers. And again, we've been really thrilled to see responses from people at CNN and Fox News about wanting to hear our voices and being receptive to Scoop 08 and to like-minded voter engagement projects and youth engagement projects. But yeah, I mean, I think in December, we'll have a better understanding of how we want to develop moving forward. Do we want to be a site where any student can offer his or her perspective that's, you know, unedited and that's, it's almost just a political huff post for young people? Or do we want to have a team of a dozen reporters who are on these beats constantly, who are the Mike Allens and John Harris's of Politico.com? And that's a decision that we're going to have to make, but it's...
Would there be rule? Would there be turnover? Because when I think of a university newspaper, the whole problem is that your staff, your editor-in-chief
right.
has only been there for 6 months, and then
right.
the whole staff graduates, and you got these freshmen. So what would that be as far as retaining a staff?
Right.
Do you keep rolling over, like the
Absolutely.
Political menudo? You keep replacing
well,
the cards?
I mean, I think that's a critical question that we'll have to think about. But I think there are several members of our leadership team who may graduate in the next year or two. Hopefully will graduate in the next year or two. And I envision them becoming part of Scoop 08's management or Scoop Media Inc. And Scoop Media Inc. is the company that essentially owns Scoop 08. And
what's that, you?
Yeah.
At least half of it.
Just wondering. With my partner. But the idea is you know, Andrew Mangino at Yale, he's a junior. He'll be graduating in another year or so. You know, there will be students who continue, who are now graduates, who continue to shape the direction of Scoop Enterprises in the future, moving forward, anything journalistic we do. So I think it will, in fact, give some people the opportunity to shape the voice and to allow Scoop Media Inc. to create other journalistic avenues for us to have a permanent presence in the blogosphere and the world of online journalism. So, you know, some of our editors and reporters now, I think, will certainly who might be graduating will have a conversation about that, about moving forward, and all the opportunities that we could continue to offer to young people. Now perhaps our job being trying to figure out how we can create that kind of venue for young people. So moving from kind of this extracurricular type activity to employment. So that's something to consider.
So Alexander, as part of your journalism skills and ethics training, do you cover media law issues? And if you do have a legal issue that arises, do you have lawyers on staff that assist you with that? Where do you go for help?
Weil, Gotchel & Manges is a law firm that took our project on pro bono.
Great.
And they're our legal representation. So direct all questions. we talk to our reporters about the importance of integrity and honesty and concerns about plagiarism and concerns about other issues in journalistic ethics, about libel and slander and something they publish that could potentially violate the law. Yes, but beyond I don't know how in depth a newspaper might go in teaching its reporters or correspondents about you know, ways they could potentially violate the law. But I think we do our best effort to try to offer that information. So it's, you know, it's more general in nature. It's not statute by statute. But, you know, what would constitute libel or slander or any other kind of unbecoming content?
Have you had any complaints or issues that have actually required legal assistance from what you've covered so far? Well, that's good to know. One of the things you mentioned was sort of going back and looking at what public records there are available for the next big story. It's amazing how much is out there. One of the most powerful tools for reporters is to use the Freedom of Information Act. And the you're dealing with, much of their history is available if you make the right requests, if you dig through the FEC, the Federal Election Commission records, and things like that. is part of the help that you're giving to correspondents, showing them sort of what legal tools they can use to get access to information?
Yeah.
Right.
Could you give us maybe one or two specific examples of the stories that you're most proud of, either because you broke something that the mainstream media just didn't catch on to, or because you provided a unique perspective you just weren't hearing in the mainstream media, or because you saw the reporter kind of develop as a journalistic skill as you watched the story progress?
All the time. I passed around, I think, an editorial many of us are very proud of, which is on the future of presidential debates. And that was a unique angle that we were taking. I mentioned it earlier. I'd also say...
And what was special about that one?
Well, it was special because it ultimately resulted in a proposal that we sent to many media outlets arguing that we should have a bipartisan forum in this unprecedented election year where, when they were still in the race, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John McCain, Mike Huckabee, and Ron Paul could have one debate and conversation. It would be, I think, an even more interesting and healthy exchange of disparate ideas and kind of political identities, one that I think would advance the political conversation in this country manyfold. That's one example of an editorial voice. I did a piece, there have been many pieces, you know, exploring Mike Huckabee's roots as a broadcaster, as a governor from Hope, Arkansas, who has a kind of charismatic character and bent like Bill Clinton, and that's something that we wrote in a piece. There was a very, I thought, interesting take on how intellectualism matters in candidates, and one of our reporters interviewed several historians, and I passed around another piece on history as well. This was a different piece early in Scoop's life. And it was about past presidents who considered themselves scholars and speaking to some people in the academic community about the current crop of candidates and if that's a characteristic, we should look for in a potential president. The piece I passed around, should candidates be talking more about history, is an article interviewing several Pulitzer Prize-winning and Bancroft Prize-winning historians about the importance of history and remembering what, you know, this country was founded on and kind of the eras of American history that relate to contemporary politics. So those are a lot of ideas, and we love ideas. In terms of, you know, I can't tell you, identify one story in particular where we really broke that and that became part of the mainstream news cycle. And as Professor Palfrey said himself, you know, we're still waiting to get our big scoop, and that's something that I think will come eventually. And, you know, keep on working at it. Yes?
You mentioned in your presentation that you seem to think that you would have more credibility if you're more like print media than, you know, media. Did I misunderstand you there?
Say that again?
You seem to mention that if you're more like media, you would have more credibility.
Not print media. You know, some of the defining characteristics of print media, which are not necessarily synonymous with all print media, or which are not necessarily incompatible with online venues. In other words, you know, just looking at the process, that process could be used successfully, in my mind, in print or online. But verifying sources, fact-checking, copy editing, many blogs are produced without editorial supervision. Many online sites that consider themselves kind of a mixture of news and opinion don't have the same editorial supervision that print media have.
Well, the last three things would cease to exist if, for example, like the clip that you showed about
right.
Like McCain is, you know, it doesn't have to be proven that it's actually in, you know, all of the verification fails to be a problem. And at the same time, you know, if I question something you wrote, like, oh, you know,
it's interesting to me that your qualitative frames of reference are all mainstream. Mm-hmm. And the New York Times, CNN, Judy Woodruff, so on. While, so, and I'm wondering. Why? I mean, it's interesting to me because in a way, I mean, you know, a lot of what we study here is the citizen media stuff. It's sort of like
right.
that. Those are what you're pointing to are the poll stars. They don't change a whole lot. They are changing some. But there's a lot of good stuff that's happening outside of the mainstream.
Well,
I'm wondering
absolutely.
If you look
well,
toward those.
Well, I mean,
how.
For instance, Jay Rosen's off the bus.
Yeah.
And my partner and I met with Jay Rosen this past summer and brainstormed and discussed ideas. Absolutely, I think his project has been successful. I think it's probably had less editorial supervision and direction than Scoop 08, which is something that's worth noting. And he initially told us, and I don't know if this is really happening with Off the Bus, that there were going to be like editors from mainstream newspapers assigned to kind of supervise what's happening. And I haven't followed up enough to know if that did happen, and giving citizen journalists, like, you know, almost tutorials from mainstream journalists, political editors. I don't know what if he ultimately did that. He had a terrific piece, I think it was, it may have been in Slate, about the coverage of the campaign thus far, and the kind of criticizing the horse race centered approach by so many journalists. And that's, again, something that we've tried to avoid by publishing opinions and news ideas on a regular basis without looking specifically to what's going on that particular day or hour or second. But in terms of my frames of reference, I consume a lot of mainstream media, but I also consume a lot of citizen journalism. What could be argued is evolved. I think citizen journalism is trying to adopt some standards of mainstream media too now. But as far as citizen journalism operations, I think that we have to develop citizen journalists who know what they're doing, and who are going to publish credible things, articles or blog posts. So I don't know if you have a more specific question.
No, it was just interesting to me because I think there are an awful lot of, I'm glad you mentioned Jay Rosen because he's done a lot in that area. So is Dan Gilmore, who works here also. And Persephone here, there are a bunch of people here that are doing things. It's just interesting to me that that you started with those, you know. So it's just it's your, what you want to do. It's your style. It's a great thing. I was just wondering how you
got there. I wanted to know if you had any other questions about the influence of citizen journalism, because really what we're trying to do for those young people who are not familiar with journalism is to offer, you know, the guidance that we need in order for them to become more educated journalists, real journalists.
Yeah.
So part of our process is...
I guess part of it is that I feel like a lot of the mainstream has actually been bad and has let us down. Okay, so for example, At UCSB, where I also hang out in California, Forrest Sawyer spoke there last year, old mainstream journalist, and basically blamed mainstream journalism for not kicking tires a lot harder leading into the Iraq war.
Right, and I think Bill Moyers had a fabulous documentary on that same issue. I agree with you. I think, let's not forget about, people like Dana Priest of the Washington Post, who not only broke the CIA prisons abroad story, but also the deplorable conditions of Walter Reed. I mean, you know, I subscribe to the philosophy that, you know, a lot of what, and this is, I think, just common sense, a lot of what bloggers and citizen journalists do is completely dependent upon the good work, the dedication, hours and hours of work of what we call mainstream journalists. I think that, and I think that, you know, we're facing a huge dilemma because a lot of those hours are being cut short as more and more mainstream journalists are being fired and laid off.
I think we have time for two quick more questions. Did you have a question as well?
What's the best way to promote a website like yours?
Can you tell me?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I think, you know, we've tried to, you know, we use a lot of techniques that many news websites use also, you know, kind of spreading the message, sending news alerts, updates, informing people of new articles to look out for. In terms of publicizing the site, we send journalists, both mainstream and citizen, reporters, updates about stories we're working on to try to encourage them to think about an idea we're proposing or a piece that we've written, and those updates happen fairly regularly. So as far as our PR approach, it's continue producing the kind of original content we want to, share that production with people both within the blogosphere and outside of the blogosphere, and in mainstream news circles, and to try to generate buzz, and to try to generate that buzz in all journalistic circles.
One last question.
I just wanted to follow up on Doc's comment with the idea of one of the rises of citizen journalism has been to debunk the mainstream journalism or point out their vast flaws, both in terms of the process, right? So where is spin not being, but I think also just fact checking. Certainly you can point to a number of sites that have risen to become sources for the mainstream.
Oh, absolutely.
So I just, in that dynamic, given the limitations, you can see sort of why people moved into that space in terms of both need and the supply side as well. How do you see sort of your role in that? Do you see stand above and wait for people to fact check you as you sort of follow this older model? And again, that assumptions live in that one. Or do you use that as a shortcut to sort of generate content?
Sure. Well, I think we...
The short question version of that question is, do you quote the pro-evolution and the non-evolution side of the argument?
Right. I mean, I think we can do both. I mean, in the idea for me is back to I mean, in part, we try to back-check ourselves and obviously make certain that everything we're producing is up to our standard. So in that sense, I think the former that you're describing. I mean, at the same time, I think what you're saying is true. Citizen journalists operate as media critics very frequently, and it's like you have a bunch of CJRs online, you know, all over the place. And that's fine, but they're also, again, their framework wouldn't be there without whatever the mainstream media is producing. And you know, we can always be critical of what's being produced by the mainstream media. But I think our approach is to try to verify all the details and offer the content that we think can stand, you know, the test of time. And if that means, you know, more time in the production process rather than getting it out there immediately, then that's what we're going to do.
We should be wrapping up, but I think, Sally, did you have another question? One final?
Sure, yeah. It's just a question of where are you most clearly trying to draw, or are you trying to draw the link between journalism by and for students and students voting and actual civic engagement?
Right. Well, again, I would draw your attention to the buzz that some of the ideas we propose and the reporting we put out there will create, and we feel in part has created already the enthusiasm for young people to engage electorally and to go to the polls. And Scoop 08 is one of dozens and dozens of efforts, some very well known, some lesser known, to try to engage young people's minds, and that means engage them enough so that they decide to go to the polls in November or, you know, during the primary season. And there's no doubt, whether it's Scoop 08 or, you know, MTV's news unit, that we're all trying to think of, you know, innovative ways, both through technology and ideas, to draw that enthusiasm, you know, and to elicit that kind of widespread interest among young people.
Can I just follow up on that question? And I missed the first part, so maybe you answered this, but how do you try to reach out, and this falls a little bit out of this question, but do you try to reach out to young people that might not be politically engaged at all, and how, if so, how do you do that?
Well, I mean, I can't say that we've made a concerted effort to try to draw people in. I mean, we've always talked about young people as a unit. Within that unit, trying to read political work and less inclined. And I think, you know, we've tried to draw in the less inclined by suggesting that the kind of journalism we're producing and the way that we're constructing it through all these beats, through journalists on unconventional topics and candidates, I mean, that's a reason perhaps to be interested. So that's one PR technique we use to try to generate enthusiasm among perhaps the more apathetic folks among young people. But really it's been an attempt. I mean, we haven't isolated them with specific PR tactics. It's, you know, that message has been a universal one that we've used to attract both the politically inclined and the less politically inclined.
Are you on MySpace?
I couldn't find it.
Are we on MySpace?
Are you on MySpace?
We're on Facebook, and we were on MySpace. I think we're on MySpace.
Somebody's space.
Yeah.
You're not personally on Facebook.
What's that?
You're not personally on Facebook.
Oh yeah, I am. I'm not blocking you, so I'm
okay. Well, thanks very much. This was very, very interesting, and we look forward to to see the new version of the website, Scoop 2.0. Thanks very much.
Are you still involved with the radio station?
Yeah.
So I was looking up, is it WPAA? You're on the FCC records. Are you still on the air, or is it?
It's online.